This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Taco just $2.99. Comes with a big cube. This deal's so fine. Brisket breakfast, so much to choose for $2.99. You really can't lose.
Taco to go. Taco to.
This deal legit.
Taco to go. Taco.
Only at Quick Trip.
Taco to go. Taco to go. Taco to go.
$2.99.
Lance, good morning. How are you?
Hey, what's going on? Hope you guys are doing well.
We're doing great. It's great to talk to you because we're trying to figure out what happens now with Shota on the shelf, at least for looks like a few starts if we're listening to everything said. What do you do? So you look at, they brought up a reliever with options so they could send him back down. Is it going to be Cade Horton Day in New York, or do you think they'll stick with the other guy that was pitching pretty well in AAA, and that of course is the former White Sox player who struggled like hell last year, Chris Flexen, but has turned it around, erased the pitch, doing pretty well.
Yeah, this is a tough one. I mean, my initial impression was that it depends probably on the length of Shota being out. If you remember last year, Justin Steele had a hamstring injury that kept him out for about a month. Council said yesterday they thought it would be a little more than 2 weeks. So that's in a weird spot where it's like, okay, do you want Cade Horton to come up for basically two turns in the rotation and go back down? You know, it puts you in kind of a weird spot if he looks really good. I think if they knew it would be a month or more, then Cade would be up. But my if you made me guess right now, if you put me on the spot, I would say it is Cade Horton pitching in New York on Saturday. But I think it's kind of like a coin flip right now. Talking to people in the org, I mean, I think Cade Horton's ready. I think they think Cade Horton's ready. He added a sinker about three starts ago to throw versus right-handed hitters to kind of help him hover the inner third of the plate and then let everything work outer third, the fastball, the slider he throws. I thought that was very much like a finishing pitch of sorts. You know, it's not particularly hard for organizations to add sinkers. It's just kind of like an orientation change, and you throw like your four-seamer. So they added that, and I immediately went, okay, yeah, they think he's ready. You know, they could have given him this at any time they wanted, but this is very much a pitch that I think he's going to need versus major league hitters. So I think he's ready. I think he's – if you're putting me on a spot, he's probably one of the best five or six starters on the team. You know, I think – you know, Ben Brown's kind of had an up-and-down season. I thought he looked great in Milwaukee. Prior to that, he didn't look too great, and Council said that as well. I think that there's maybe a point at which this season you look and you go, yeah, Cade's the best fifth starter on this team. He's better than Wicks. He's better than Brown. He's better than some of these other guys. I just think the mix is deeper. I think the upside is perhaps slightly higher, which might be a really hot take, especially over a guy like Ben Brown. But, yeah, I'm torn on this one, man. I wish I had – it doesn't seem like anybody kind of knows, and we're kind of waiting on what they want to do. So I bet we'll find out, you know, maybe Wednesday after the game what they're doing, or maybe it's Thursday. But my guess right now is Cade, but I think it could go either way between Flexen and Cade.
Well, maybe you're in a position where you can help us understand what Cade Horton has done through six starts to put himself in a position to be considered for this promotion, because I think coming into this year – there was a lot of hope, but still curiosity over what kind of pitcher he would become. Still, because of the surgery and the injury that he has, you know, been dealing or had to deal with. But at this point of the season, what has he done to be this successful?
Yeah, it's a great point. So last year, I think the way to look at this is just through fastball velocity. Last year, he sat 94 on his fastball. You go back to 2023, he sat 96. That was the year where everybody pretty much had him as like a top four or five pitching prospect in all of baseball, not just the number one in the Cubs organization. Then he jumped to last year. Again, he didn't look that great. He goes down with a scap injury. And then you jump to this season, now he's back to 96. So his stuff looks like it did in 2023 for the most part. The main thing that I understand is that earlier this spring, they kind of went through like a mechanical intervention with him, fixed his posture a little bit in terms of how he was stacking his torso relative to his pelvis, allowed him to pick up back the velo, slider picked back up the sweep he had. They kind of just like reset him to 2023. And that has been, from my understanding, one of the biggest keys in terms of allowing him to be more successful. They were able to just revert him back to 2023. And now it's just really a matter of building back innings. You know, I think you'll hear a lot of the time people just talk about raw innings caps. I think the Cubs and a lot of other organizations have moved more towards like looking at workload, which is a bit more of like an ambiguous concept. They're probably never going to tell you exactly what is going into that workload number. A lot of teams, what it is basically looking at the intensity of throws, the individual torque on a pitcher's arm, how that compounds from bullpens to warm up to actual in-game throws, et cetera. This is what you saw the White Sox do with Garrett Crochet last year, where he made, when he jumped like 140 innings or something like that.
Yeah.
Like that is, seems crazy, but they monitored it very closely. And, you know, they had Brian Bannister there. They had him still. And then he ends up going to the Red Sox and he looks fantastic. So these teams that are a little sharper on the pitching side are getting a better understanding that it's not just he's capped at 100 innings. You know, we saw this with Steele, too. He jumped 120, 130 innings year over year. So I think the Cubs have it. If Cade is healthy the entire season, I think he could get to probably like 130-ish, 140-ish innings. Maybe that's very aggressive. And again, I'm guaranteeing health through the season on this. But that is has some implication on what we're talking about here, where perhaps late in the year, he reverts back to being more of a reliever. And then you have to consider how the intensity of individual throws, now that he'd probably be up a tick or two in the bullpen, would impact that overall workload number. So I've always thought the easiest thing to do was to bridge, use him as a bridge now that showed it's down, to get to the point at which you need to acquire another starter. Then you bring in another starter or two, and then all of a sudden you can revert him back to the pen, and you have a lot of options. You could puzzle a piece of pen together. I imagine they'll acquire a reliever. You have Cade, you know, maybe Van Brown at that point becomes a reliever. We'll see. So you have options there, which I think is really what we're building towards. And the fact that they have guys like Ray and Boyd and these other guys pitching so well right now, I think gives you some buffer. But I'm playing the long game here. You know, I'm trying to think ahead. This team looks so good. But I think a lot of people are starting to project forward and go, okay, who do you acquire? You know, what's the role for Cade? Do you want Ben Brown as a five? Like, a lot of variables here that I think will have some impact down the stretch.
Yeah, you know, I think the kid is going to be a contributor. I just don't know that you need to begin that now. I don't like the idea that they are using him to fill in for Shota instead of trying to use him for what's best for him. You know what I mean? Like, is the best thing for him to be in New York, or is the best thing to be, you know, at home beating up the White Sox? And I'm not saying you have to make a decision only for the on the basis of what he can do, but it seems like that should be a consideration.
Yeah, I think I agree with that. It's a good point. I think that debut in New York would be pretty brutal, but you throw him into the fire, you see if he can survive. Like, I generally don't mind being aggressive with prospects, you know? Like, I think Cade is he's pitched in the College World Series. He's pitched on huge stages. This isn't like a high school kid that has never thrown in big games. So I'm confident that Cade, if you put him in that New York spot, what did he get? Alonso Soto and there's a Nimmo, their leadoff hitter, off the top, you know? Like, that is, there you go, man. Like, let's see what you got. Like, I'm here for that. Like, I think to some extent you're right, but at the same time, like, how good this team has been allows you to have a little bit of freedom
around
scoring runs in certain spots. So if Cade comes out of that start and you're like, man, he looks incredible, then you start to have conversations about, okay, how does Ben Brown look over his next two starts? You know, I mean, I get he pitched well in Milwaukee, but two starts ago we were wondering how long the starter experiment with him would last. You know, he's been, again, pretty volatile. The mix is really consolidated. I've always wondered whether he needs some kind of sinker or something along those lines to help just getting another pitch in zone, to help the decay, so to speak, of some of the fastball slider or fastball curveball combination that he has in game. So that would be sink or swim. It'd be a really fun start on Saturday if they give it to Cade.
Talking with Lance Brozdowski from the Marquee Sports Network, talking about the Cubs pitching prospects and the Cubs pitching staff. And Chris Flexen is one of those reasons why they have some flexibility and some protection in that rotation and on that pitching staff. It's interesting, Lance, because you have talked about and reported that it's not so much the arm slot or the arm angle, but it's the fact that the Cubs reduce how much he uses his sweeper. What have the Cubs done specifically to get the best out of Chris Flexen?
Yeah, those are the two main points there. I I initially didn't see too much of a difference with the arm slot. That's partially because we don't have direct arm angle data at AAA. We don't get it until a guy comes up to the majors. But after, again, following some people in the org, the big thing here is, like, a combination of how, like, his forearm is relating back to his torso. If you watch him, he's a very over-the-top guy. Like, I'm sure you saw this with the White Sox. You saw this with the Houston Mariner and such. Like, he's very vertical. He reminds me of, like, you know, Nick Pivetta, Justin Verlander, these guys that are, like, touching release heights that very few pitchers in baseball are touching because of how vertical and how much they almost, like, what you say, dump their torso at release. So the thing they did was kind of lower him back. Again, getting back to this point they mentioned with Cade, like, it's kind of like a postural thing. It's like, how efficient are you in your movement? And we think you're generally more efficient by lowering your arm a little bit, especially in Flexen's case, like pulling his forearm down a little bit. So that, for the most part, seems like it will push a little more velocity with him. I think he was 91 last year. For the most part, to me, he looks like he's 91 at AAA. So I'm wondering whether they think this change is something that takes maybe a little time to stick, and therefore, you know, he's maybe more 92, 93 at some point. But the sweeper usage is one that's interesting. My guess there is that by taking away the sweeper, or I guess by adding the sweeper, which I believe the White Sox did, what happens is you run into perhaps a little more vertical of a slot. So by them taking it away, what they're saying is, like, okay, we don't want you trying to clip the front of that ball to get that horizontal movement on that pitch, even though it was pretty good with the White Sox. We prefer a little bit of a lower arm. We'll give you a second slider that's a little bit different than the sweeper, and we think it's maybe going to be equally as effective, but the ultimate result here is, hey, with this slightly lower arm, we think it'll be better. So I think they did a great job with him. They seem to have a bit of a couple really good outcomes with some of these older pitchers that have kicked around the league, and they've made subtle adjustments too. I think they've done a great job with Colin Ray, who we'll see today against Verlander. So I'm optimistic around a lot of their pitch development, even though some of the things they do are kind of odd. Like, they throw a bunch of four-seam fastballs. They don't really throw their four-seam fastballs hard, but we are finally getting some good stuff in the pen, which they haven't had for 4 or 5 years. So the waves are kind of changing, and I think the Cubs are taking a pretty fascinating approach from just their mix standpoint. One that is, you know, zigging against the rest of the league, where pretty much everybody's backing off kinds of fastballs, and the Cubs are like, we're cool throwing them, like, try to hit them. And so far it's worked. I mean, I think they have top five starter ERA in baseball, so things are looking up.
You know, we had a fantastic conversation with Tommy Hotovy when the torpedo bat was, like, a big thing, and his response was, well, it's good to see the hitters try something, because it does seem like in pitching – they're inventing a new pitch every year, or they're converting a pitch, or they're changing something. It seems like that is where all of the advancements in baseball are coming, in the pitch lab.
Yeah. I mean, I think, again, this is something that I feel like I talk about with a lot of people, but the idea is just, like, we have a really good way to measure a lot of the things that happen in pitching. And it's funny, because, like, a lot of this information is public. Like, I can tell you the individual break on a given pitch that Matt Boyd had in any start. I can do it live, because this stuff is literally live. You can go and second screen the experience by going on, like, Baseball Savant. Like, that, to me, is almost, like, kind of insane, you know? If you think back to, what was it, like, 2015 is when this thing started to be aggregated. With hitting, we're still kind of in the dark with a lot. And it's so dependent on, I think, how guys get to point of contact. We're still kind of lost on, you know, their pass into contact, what their vertical bat angle is, which is an element, a variable that I know a lot of teams look at internally on the hitting side. There's a lot of numbers there that I know teams look at internally that we just don't have access to on the public side. And I often argue a lot of the times that what helps progress the sport from an individual angle is when this stuff becomes public, because then you get a lot of people starting to dig into it. It becomes more common, and then you get a lot of those voices and people who are young pushing into organizations and coming in with different perspective, fresh perspective, and making change. We've seen this time and time again on the pitching side. I mean, think of how many people on the media side got scooped by organizations probably like 6 or 7 years ago because of all this pitching stuff and the insights they had. On the hitting side, like, we're still kind of waiting for some of these more underlying elements for us to get a good understanding of how these guys are moving and such. And I think they've done a good job, you know, some of the in-box stuff. What's your distance to the plate? How far back are you? Like, that's kind of a cool thing that we've gotten. We saw that with PCA in making some changes, and perhaps that being one of the reasons why he's slugging a lot more this year. But pitching's probably always going to be ahead of hitting. The initiative they have in the pitcher-hitter battle is just really, really important. And so much of hitting is dependent on location and pitch type that it's sometimes hard. Like, sometimes for 2 weeks, you just don't get a pitch in a spot that you can hit. And you're 2-for-20, and it's like, oh, he's in a slump. And it's like, well, I don't know. He just hasn't been throwing anything in the area of the zone that he generally slugs. And then all of a sudden, you run to a two-week stretch where the guy goes, you know, hits 400 with six homers, and you're thinking that he changed something, and the guy's like, I didn't change anything. I just got pitching to hit. So it's one of those things where, like, hitting is very much an art. But I think we'll start to see more, like, objective approaches to it as time progresses, and I think that'll be good for the sport.
Switching from pitching to hitting, how do you explain why Pete Crow Armstrong has become so good at hitting for power on pitches outside the zone?
Yeah, this is a great point. This is something I've been kind of tracking because I find it fascinating. From what I understand, he said in some interviews too, like, he doesn't really know. I find that fascinating. You know, we saw year over year some of the changes he made. I just mentioned some of, like, the in-box stuff. Like, he's moved back in the box. I would imagine that allows him to have more time to read some of these breaking balls and such. And for the most part, a lot of hitters are back in the box. There are very few guys that are up front in the box. I think, personally, one of the things that is slightly underrated with him, and I brought it up earlier in the year when his bat speed was a little bit hotter, it's kind of toned back, but he's still sitting like at about average now, whereas last year he was below average. And I think one of the big things here is a lot of people just be like, oh, it's more about basketball. I don't really care about bat speed. But you break down bat speed on batted balls over the last couple of years, and you go from like this 70 to 71 mile per hour window up to 71, 72, where he now sits. And on average, those batted balls, you can add probably about like 40 to 60 points of slug, depending on the angle they're hit at. And you can add, you know, anywhere from like 10 to 20 feet just by jumping like 1 mile per hour on bat speed on those batted balls. And I think that's allowing him more time to see some of these pitches deep in the zone and actually do damage on them. Whereas if you take these pitches to last year and he's making contact with them, I don't think a lot of them are barrels. And then what you run into is like probably they're saying, hey, tone it down or shut it down below the zone because like that's not productive contact. Where he's in a very unique spot right now where he's able to cover vertically down, even if there's some variance there. And if he whiffed in those pitches, I think the net of him being able to actually barrel some of those balls below the zone is an overall positive for the organization and for him specifically. Obviously, we've seen that. And to have that deep in the lineup, too, is really exceptional, I think. Like, now you have Dansby starting to lock back in, hitting eighth. I imagine he'll jump back up at some point. But Pete in that, like, 6-7 spot, it's like the bottom of the lineup's pretty good. And I generally, a lot of it, I've always joked that, like, when you're talking about the bottom of the lineup, the problem is that the top of the lineup probably isn't that good. You know, this is what I feel like we ran into this sometime in the past with the Cubs, where it's like, man, look at the 6-8 hitters. And it's like, great, we're talking about them because the 1-4 is not particularly great, you know, from an overall production standpoint. But this year, the reason the Cubs offense is top 3 in baseball in, like, pretty much every metric is because of all this production top down. So this is like the one exception to that rule that I have where it's like we're talking about the bottom of the lineup. It's probably because the top four aren't great. But with the Cubs, everybody seems to be hitting and it's exceptional.
Great stuff, Lance. Thank you, buddy. Great to catch up with you.
Thanks, Lance.
Yeah. Thanks for having me, guys. Take care.
That's Lance Prostowski.